Hello, friends. Today's episode is brought to you by From Within Records. Please head over to the From Within Records web store, pick up a Hardcore Pride crew neck, a 2023 roster poster, or if you're on your vinyl tip, please go pick up a copy of Path to Divinity by Visions of Mortality, or Condensing Flesh by Worn, or Nature of Mortality by Choice to Make. All available now, all awesome bands on an awesome label. If you're not following From Within Records on social media, please head over to Twitter or Instagram and click that follow button to stay up to date on all the current news. And like I always say, please support From Within Records because they support us. If you're looking for high quality merch for your band, for your business, please hit up my friends over at Good Fortune Printing out of Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. You can follow them on Instagram at Good Fortune Printing, or if you want to get in contact with them, please email them contact@goodfortuneprinting.com. Before we get into today's guest, I had a crazy weekend. I got to see Triple S, Levolution. It was amazing. I can't stop thinking about that night. The performance was amazing. They sounded great. The vibes were on point. I'm just so over the moon. It's been a long time since I have walked away from a K-pop concert and have felt like this. Obviously, I've seen a ton of amazing groups, but Triple S is just very special to me. Something that I've been following from the very beginning, and it's been a fun journey. So to be able to get to see a unit of theirs for the first time, it was amazing. So I'm looking forward to seeing all the other members in due time, but that was fun. But I went to Palm Springs because my best friend, Nate, shout out Nate, you guys might be familiar with him. If you listen to the JOP MMA show, he co-hosts that with me and Jeff. He's a real one, but he got married to his lovely partner, shout out Cecilia. And it was very important for me to be there. I've known them for their whole relationship. And when I used to live in the desert, you had a ton of friends, people who were your ride or dies or whatever. But when I picked up and decided to move to Orange County, I had a lot of support at the beginning. And I thought these friendships were gonna last, whatever. I move away and it turns out not everybody was a real one except for Nate and Cecilia. So shout out to them for always, caring about me, which is very important. I always tell my buddy Garrett, loyalty is more important than love. And for me to have moved away and for them to still check in, to see how I'm doing. When they come to town, they actually want to hang out with me. When I go to town, I obviously they're like the first people I hit up if it's not my parents. But it's just a beautiful friendship, people that I admire. So I was very happy to be included in the wedding. It was fun. So congratulations, Nate and Cecilia. Hope you guys are having a wonderful time right now while I'm filming this. But it was an awesome time. It was beautiful. I was happy to go down there, see friends, get to see Nate's family, Cecilia's family. I got to see my own family. It was a good time. So I'm happy I went. We're back in Orange County, getting the ball back on track. But today's guest, we had to track down our good friend Connor, plays in a band called Climb. More recently joined the band Hate Still Burns, which is a band that I'm obsessed with. If you're not familiar with Hate Still Burns, do yourself a favor, go search them out. But Climb is awesome. I was put onto Climb by my good friend Nick Bertels. He plays in a band called Ankle Biter. A really good friend has helped me out with a lot of things behind the scenes. So thank you, Nick Bertels. But Nick Bertels put me on Climb. If you're not familiar with them, I think they're an awesome band. You should hit pause, go boot up your Spotify, Apple Music, Tidal, Bandcamp, YouTube, whatever. Go search up Keep Me From What I Want by Climb. It's an awesome record. And to hear the journey of the band and to hear where they're headed, I'm very much looking forward to it, and I'm happy to have been able to discover them through Nick. So thank you for that. But Connor's an awesome guy does a lot of cool stuff for his scene, which I was so interested in. We go on for a pretty long time about all the different aspects of booking shows, which I did for a very short stint, but to be able to hear it from someone who's currently doing it and doing awesome stuff, it was very fun for me to be able to pick his brain. So please go listen to Climb and then come back here and strap in and enjoy this conversation. So please, without further ado, welcome Connor to the show. Recording. Welcome to the podcast, Connor. How's it going?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Doing all right. It's my day off, so it's nice to be able to just relax, do a podcast, and you know, just enjoy the day.
It's my day off as well. Just woke up maybe an hour ago. So
hell yeah, that's sick. Well, I'm a fan of the bands you play in. So shout out to Climb, and I actually got to give a big shout out to our mutual friend, Nick Bertels, who actually put me on to Climb because I wasn't aware till he sent me a text. And I was like, all right, normally Nick doesn't, text me about any bullshit. He's normally, pretty spot on. So when you reached out, I'm like, all right, cool. Like, let me actually take the time to investigate. And sure enough, like once again, he was right. And I'm definitely a fan.
I appreciate it. Nick is somebody I would take a bullet for. I've known him for years, and he's probably one of my favorite people in the whole scene, let alone the New England scene. And he's a great dude. And he told me I had been listening to the podcast for a while, and you had so many of my friends on there, and I mentioned it to Nick, and he was like, "Oh, we should get you on there." And I was like, "I don't think Jamie is aware of Klein or anything else that I do." So he's like, "Oh, let me send a text." And I was like, "Okay." And lo and behold, worked out just fine.
Yeah. Interesting enough, I wasn't aware of Klein, but I'm aware of the other things that you do, but I just didn't have a face to the name, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I remember you talked to BG about Vanguard.
Yeah.
And I was one of the people that like started that with my friend Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
And then BG hopped on a little bit later. And now... We do a new thing called Peace on Fire. It's me and BG and Chris LeBlanc from the band Opposition. Because a lot of the other dudes were just kind of like had been worn out booking shows.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of stopped. And so we kind of wanted to keep going. So we started a whole new thing that we've been booking under for a couple months now.
Yeah, and how's that going? Because I look at the Instagram, and it seems like you guys have like a certain style when it comes to all the flyers, which I think is cool because it makes you guys stand out. So when everybody sees a flyer from you guys, they automatically know it's a show coming from your camp.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've done the same thing with like all my musical projects in the past. I like the idea of one cohesive theme and aesthetic that makes people recognize, oh, this is what it is, this is where it's coming from, etc. It took me a couple months to like have that idea click in my head, but it's starting to work out now. And yeah, so people see those flyers and they go, "Oh, there it is. Must be Connor and BG and Chris." So we have a lot of cool unannounced stuff coming in the fall. We only have a handful of shows for this month right now.
Okay. And for anybody out there who may be like a newer promoter, do you have any advice? Because it can be tough to deal with all the bullshit that comes with booking a show. And I can speak mm-hmm. from experience, and I've stepped away from that because it was just a lot of things that I just didn't want to deal with. So I was like, I did it a couple of times. It was successful. It was cool. But just with the lack of time that I have, I just don't want to take on a responsibility that I know I can't like fully invest in. So I was like, all right, this is probably better suited for somebody else with more time?
I'm fortunate enough, and depending on how you view it, every member of Climb plays in at least one or two other bands. So Climb plays so sporadically and not consistently enough to where I have all this extra time to book shows.
Mm-hmm.
And if for anyone that wants to get into it, I mean, I would recommend going to shows for at least a couple of years before you even consider it. You really have to learn what clicks, what doesn't, what's going to bring people in, what days do better than other days, what locations do better than other days. And then simply, there's some things that people don't tell you when you start doing it, and you kind of have to figure out on your own. So I would recommend asking someone like me or someone you know that books shows and say, hey, I want to do this. I am more than open to show anybody how to do it. I've shown several different people, and some people stuck with it, and a lot of quit really quick. But because I mean, a lot of people don't understand little things that I even had to learn in the last 2 years, like back end and contracts and all that kind of stuff. Because when you get to start doing bigger bands, you got to deal with agents, and that can be a whole thing, especially when they use like this vernacular that goes right over your head. So really just don't be afraid to ask somebody else, like, hey, what the hell does this mean? I'm like, oh, it just means this. It's cuddled up this way, blah, 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 blah. It's not that complicated when you get down to it, but it is, at times, wrenches can be thrown in that make the whole process a pain in the ass.
Yeah, I found that you have to be on it when it comes to promoting your show. Because you want to believe in your scene, right? That like people are going to show up, the show's going to go over well, but you do realize when there is a lack of promotion, that does affect the turnout, especially when it's like, you know, one is a band's first time touring through the area, or when you're taking a chance on trying something new, which people don't always take to, or they're not as welcoming to things that they're not familiar with. So that's one thing that I learned through doing shows, is like the promotion aspect, which sometimes people don't really think about because they'll see it in their feed, but they don't repost it. So they think it, like, somebody else is like, you know, doing it, so that's enough. But that was one thing that I realized, like, that promotion is so important, even if the bands are already like established.
Yeah. When I see somebody share a piece on Firefly, I'm internally grateful because I know that's what's really important about getting it out to the streets and stuff. And Kyle, who did Vanguard with me, he now does Gatekeeper Jam with Colin of Arabia and Chris Cesarini from Street Power. And he had this idea when we did Vanguard to bring back physical flyers and just hand them out outside doors at shows.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lumpy from Days and Sanction, etc., told us, why don't you put a little QR code in the corner of the flyer that just leads you to the ticket link, which is so simple, and the fact that we hadn't thought of it before is ridiculous. And that has just been like the physical flyers, like, we will hand those out outside a show and then we'll check in the morning and we've already sold 20 more tickets, which is insane. So really just getting out there and just making sure people know about the show is the most important thing, because I get so many texts the morning after being like, I had no idea this was happening. And I was like, I posted about it a ton.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's also another, like, sometimes you find bands that won't even post the flyer once that are on the show, which is just infuriating. But it does happen. And I'm just like, do you not want people to be there? Because if not, I don't see why you wouldn't post it. So, and then that's a whole thing. But the people, the community that aren't me, people that aren't running it, it's everyone else sharing it around with their friends, which is most key. Like, that is, because they're going to be like, oh, so-and-so's going, got our friends to go and all that. Like, people know I'm going to post about a show. People know what I do and what I've been doing for years. They're going to be like, oh, just another Connor show, it's whatever. But when they find out their friends are going, or just, especially when it's bands they don't know, they'll be like, oh, well, so-and-so's going. I have to pull up, check this out, and then hopefully it works out. I mean, I've been doing this for booking shows for about 3 or 4 years, and I've only really had a very, very small amount of poor turnouts and bombs in which I could consider it unsuccessful. But the number is very, very small, which I'm very grateful for. mm-hmm. especially in the scene is getting bigger every day, and it's really amazing that it's still thriving. So
yeah, I felt like as long as I could pay the guarantee for the bands, like touring bands or whatever, the venue was happy and kids had fun, I always felt like that was a success. Like I always, absolutely. I always had this fear because I would rely on people like Josh White, Jeff Yuma, Bob Wilson for advice, and I can't thank them enough for just letting me pick their brain about booking shows. But there's always this thing that Bob said to me. He's like, dude, as long as you don't have to go to the ATM to pay for the show, like it should be fine. And
exactly,
yeah. So it's just like every show, I'm like, all right, please don't let me have to go to the ATM, because there was literally like, because all the shows that I booked were all at Program, and Program mm-hmm. is in this like strip, and at the end of the strip was a bank, and there was this ATM, and I was like, as long as I don't have to go to that ATM ever, I'm fine. And out of like the four or five shows that I did, never had to do that. So I'm happy that I was able to do those shows with zero issues. All the bands, to my knowledge, had a great time, no issues. But I just, like I said, didn't have time to like fully invest in that. And then I just didn't want to have to deal with all the things that come with booking shows anymore. So I had to step away, and I got, recently I got asked like, hey, can you help us book a show from this band? I did. I got the venue, did everything. And then last minute, they're like, oh, never mind, we're going to go with these other people. And I'm like, all right, cool. This is exactly why I don't want to book shows anymore, because I went through all this trouble for you guys to, kind of do me dirty. I wasted my time, wasted the venue's time, everybody else's time. And that should just piss me off. I'm just like, Jesus. That's why, like, sometimes when I think about when things get more corporate with like agents and contracts, I'm like, man, maybe that stuff is necessary at a certain point. Cause like, if I would have like, had people sign stuff, and nobody could have just like kind of like, done me dirty like that, and would have saved us all like a bunch of trouble.
Yeah. I mean, that it's super embarrassing, especially cause you put yourself on the line, and you go, hey, I'm trying to book the show here. And then it's a process to get the venue. Then you finally get the venue and you get a sound guy. And then you figure out who you're going to put on it. And this goes by for weeks. And then you have everything. And then once that's all in line, I get an email. The band has just canceled their whole run, or they're going to go with this other guy. And I'm just like, all right, well, now I have to tuck my tail between my legs and be like, hey, sorry, I know I begged to use the venue on this Tuesday, but I actually don't need it anymore. So I'm sorry, but I'll hit you up again in the future. And I've lost venues that way for sure. Mm-hmm. Like where I've, and it sucks. But yeah, that's a point where like signing a contract can really help you out. Because I'm like, oh, I know they're gonna be there, and if not, there's a signature that says they have to be.
Yeah, because
I've never been super anal about it. I've never been like, I keep things in check, but I've never like ruled with an iron fist. I've never really gotten super frustrated with a band. They don't really need to be there at a certain time, as long as they're there by the time they play. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless they're backlining, but I mean, everything, if you just, obviously things happen that stress you out, but if you really just kind of keep your cool, it goes by really easy, and it can be enjoyable as much for you as it is like a job.
Yeah. I found when I was like booking these shows, I was responsible for, the whole show, right? The backline, to make things easier for everybody, making sure mm-hmm. people get paid, make sure, people are being respectful. And luckily, shout out to my friend Andy, who's there with me for all of them but one. He was able to help me with the door, so I was able to enjoy like small parts of it, but it was, there was a lot less time to enjoy it because I had to be like, more responsible, and it wasn't like just going to a show, right? I had to make sure that everything was going according to plan. And even when things were going to according to plan, somehow we'd fall like, 15, 30 minutes behind schedule when I don't even know how that shit happens, right? Because like I said, it was backline, everybody's breaking down, everybody's hustling, moving, but just things happen. And it's like, for like, yeah, every time I thought I had everything 100% in order, there's always something that was unaccounted for that would go wrong.
Mm-hmm. There's always little hiccups. Like, I luckily everyone I know, that there's people that don't book shows anymore around here that will always throw me a bone if I need help. Like, there'll be a show that I book that I'll also be playing. I'm like, who's going to work door while I'm doing this? So I'll have old friends that I used to book with, or just friends of friends, who'll be like, oh, I'll absolutely do door. Like, I have no problem doing that. Or if I just want to go have fun for like one set and go mosh, I'll have somebody be like, oh yeah, no, we can sit here. And they just take money from the next 10 people that come in. And then I come back to where I'm needed. But I'm fortunate enough to have built a strong community of friends that would help me out if I need it. And because Chris and BG do a lot of helping with like booking the actual show, mm-hmm. but they're both very busy. BG doesn't even live in Mass anymore. He lives in New Hampshire. So it's hard for him to come down to shows a lot. Like, he'll give me contacts, set me up a band that's coming through, something like that. But him actually being able to get out there is pretty tough. So I usually have to maybe ask for a little help if I need it. And I have no shame in doing that because they're my friends, and everybody, even people attending the show just as much want the show to go by smoothly. So they'd be like, yeah, sure, I'll help you do this or do that. I'm really, really grateful for that.
Yeah. The one thing that I don't like about like the fact that I did book some shows is people still think I book shows. When I've publicly stated here numerous times, like, hey, I don't book shows anymore. I'm sorry. Please don't ask me to book a show. I can point you in the right direction if you want a show. But I don't book shows. But like more recently, I went and saw this band and they played a really good set. So I went and complimented the guitar player after their set. And he doesn't say thank you. He doesn't say anything. The first words out of his mouth is, then why don't you book us? And I'm just like, geez, like, I don't book shows anymore. That was just a really strange thing. And no personal relationship. I didn't even know they knew I existed, but apparently they thought I still booked shows, and I just had to let them know. I'm like, yo, like, I don't book shows anymore. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I would have booked your band when I was booking shows, but it was just this really small window of when I did it.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. I mean, the Vanguard page has been inactive since April, and I still get emails. That page still gets DMs. Mm-hmm. I'm going to wait, give it a little bit more time for people to catch on, and then I'll probably deactivate it eventually. But it depends on which one of us sees it first, where we'll be like, oh, I'll book this. Or do you want, or I'll say, Kyle, do you and Colin and Chris want to take this over to Gatekeeper, or should I take it from me and BG? We have that mutual agreement. And there's always, if I can't make it happen, there's usually somebody that can make it happen somewhere in the area, whether it be like Western Mass or the North Shore, even maybe New Hampshire or Rhode Island. Somebody can get them a spot if I can't, whether it be I'm busy or I couldn't get one of my venues up and running. But at this point, I've met a lot of people over the last 10 years of doing this, and ever since booking shows, it's where it's really people have come up to me and be like, oh, you do this, you book that, we book my band, blah, 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 blah. So now I'm just, for better or for worse, I'm just known as that. So it's fine with me. I just, yeah, you start to build up that, that word of mouth. So people are like, oh, Jamie can hook us up for sure. And you're like, no, I don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Just one time.
Yeah, as you know, willing as I was, yeah, like I closed that chapter. It was cool, yeah. But I quickly realized that, like I said, like I just don't have time, and I don't want to agree and take on that responsibility when I'm not gonna, you know, put my all into it, because I don't want to disrespect any of the bands. I don't want to disrespect the venue. I don't want to do any of that, because if I do that, then I don't want anybody to be mad at me. So I'm just going to just fully take myself out and not be in that position to screw anybody over, or to give them like a bad representation of our scene. Cause I want everybody who travels out here to have a good time. I don't want them to have a bad time, especially because I couldn't, you know, do it properly.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. Like I always get a little bit nervous that like, I'm like, oh, this band came all the way from California. I hope they really enjoy themselves. I hope people turn out, like, mm-hmm. you know, I hope that people mosh. I hope someone buys merch, you know? And, I mean, even if I got them like their guarantee, which I'm sure makes them happy enough, but I just really want it to be awesome for them. You know, they came such a far away, and I just really want to be, I really want them to enjoy themselves. And so I'm really happy when bands come up and they're like, this was fucking awesome. And I'm like, oh, great. I'm really happy.
Now, I'm curious about venues. Do you have like a good lineup of venues that you could book at, or is it a struggle? Because out here, it seems like outside of like the professional venues, the DIY stuff is kind of like dwindling down.
We've definitely lost a lot. We lost a lot during COVID, and a lot of venues are kicking in rules. I think the biggest thing is that a lot of venues are getting more expensive, like the VFWs, mm-hmm. Which we would prefer to book at because it's a little bit more like our rules, you know, and we have a little bit more freedom. But that obviously requires more. We have to hire a sound guy. We have to find someone to do doors. We got to all that stuff. But there's a good amount. The Middle East in Cambridge has been a legendary spot since like the 70s. And it's like kind of half corporate, half not. Like they let me book shows there whenever I want, but they got a door guy for me. They got a sound guy for me. They do the ticketing for me and just cut me a check at the end of the night. And they have like massive national touring acts come through. And then I also get to book a small little whatever show on like a Tuesday night when if I want to, because we have this understanding. So that's usually my go-to. I mean, there is a lot of VFWs, but as I've noticed over the past year, they're getting more and more expensive. So it really has to be like it's a novelty thing at this point. It's just like, oh, this show would be more fun in a VFW, even though it's going to be a lot more expensive to do. Connecticut, because I've booked some shows in Connecticut over the past 2 years. They lost two of their most notable, biggest venues within a month of each other. So they are like trying to create DIY spots at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Connecticut is really struggling, and I feel horrible about it because there's so many awesome bands from there right now. As there always is, Connecticut's always been a really cool spot. But there's no place for them to play. There's no like mid-tier size venue for them to play. It's always just the big corporate ones that are usually way too large and have been a pain in the ass to deal with, or just no venue at all. Massachusetts, though, I mean, I've been here enough. I've been doing enough to where like I can always find something. But we're lucky to have that because the other states surrounding us don't really have that freedom.
Yeah, it gets rough, right? When there's scenes that there is a scene, but there's no place for them to play, and it gets really tough because, you know, you can do like backyard stuff, house stuff, but that, you know, can end abruptly because obviously, you know, with it being in like a neighborhood or whatever, things can get shut down. So without like some sort of actual venue, it gets really hard.
I didn't do it under Peace on Fire. I kind of did it myself because it was like just a fun thing. I booked a show in November for my birthday in Connecticut. And it's in like a warehouse. Like I just heard about it through the grapevine, and mm-hmm. like it's Ask a Punk because we can't post the address publicly. And that's like the best I've been able to achieve right now is this warehouse where I've heard good things about it so far. So we'll see how it goes. It's Foreign Hands headliner. It's an off date of their run with Dying Wish. And I'm excited to see how it goes. That's like the only venue I could really find for that size show. Everything else was like a big corporate venue that it's like 500 cap. Like it's too much.
And when you're finding a place like a warehouse, do you even care like what like the acoustics are like, or are you just like, I just need a building?
In that sense, like I asked the guy, like I don't even know his name. I just been messaging him through the venue's Instagram page. I'm like, do you have a sound guy? Do you need me to get one? They go, oh, we got it. And I'm like, well, what's the venue fee? Like, what do I got to pay? He goes, oh, well, I mean, there's no venue, so we'll handle it. So I'm like, all right, what is this?
Yeah, it sounds, there's a lot of trust there.
Yeah, so I just gonna have to figure it out when I get there. But no, at that point, I just really hope that if the bands get paid and people show up, that's all I really care about. If it doesn't sound amazing, that's fine. It's like, we got to work with what we have.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously I know bands and fans and people that come out to film shows have preferences over venues. all the time. I have a friend that Montana Media, his name is Matt. He has been filming shows for, he films every single show in the state of Massachusetts that's happened over the last 2 years. And I know he has, like, he gets really pissed at me when I book certain venues because he's just like, I hate standing on this stage. It sounds like shit. The lights are shit or whatever. So he has preferences, but I'm like, hey man, I got to do what I got to do. I couldn't do this show in someone's backyard. I had to do it in this bar. So we got to work with it.
Okay. And as far as you taking on that role of booking shows, that's obviously a really important role for the scene. How did you fall into that? Because it's a, like we've been speaking, it's a big undertaking.
I just wanted there to be more. There were shows happening here and there. That I don't miss a lot of shows. I go to shows 4 or 5 nights a week. Nowadays I do. And then COVID happened and then we were so show starved. And I was like, when this comes back, I want there to be a million shows. You know, I want to go to a show like every night. And then when things were starting up, I'm like, there's really not that many. So then I was like, I'm going to start booking shows like crazy. I'm just like, just bring anybody who wants to come through. Even if they don't have plans to hit Massachusetts, I'm going to ask them to come play. And I was like, oh, I want to do a fest. Let's do a fest. Like, because America's Hardcore, allegedly this is the last year, but Sam has been saying that for years. Mm-hmm. I was like, when that goes, like, what are we going to have? And so I asked other bookers in the area, which Kyle was doing his own thing. And our friends, Tyler and Dean, were doing, stuff strictly in Central Mass, which has its own little scene out there. And I was like, let's get together and do a fest. And so we all kind of got together and we're like, why don't we just make it one giant collective? And that's what Vanguard ended up being. And then some of us had different tastes, different interests, but since we were all each doing our own thing and as one thing, there was shows happening all the time. So we at least had a Vanguard show, like once a week or once every 2 weeks on top of what other people were booking. And so even though Vanguard's done and it's a whole new thing now, I just want there to be stuff consistently happening. I don't do well sitting around twiddling my thumbs. I have to be doing something or working on something. And so that's why I really wanted to book shows. It's just so there's just always something going on. For anybody, because some people work on Tuesdays and Thursdays and they only have Monday, Wednesday, Friday off. And they're like, oh shit, I wish I went to that show last night, but I had work. But there's another show tonight, so go to this one. And it keeps me busy and it keeps the scene growing and there's always something for somebody to do. That's my main reason for doing it. And then I also get to help out my friends. You know, a lot of bands, despite how good they are, just aren't given a shot because there's so much going on as well. There's so many bands out there at least. So I'm like, I know this dude's a good dude. This dude's been going to shows for 20 years. He's at everything. His band rocks, but like maybe the young kids don't know him or the old heads don't know him. So no one's going to put him on this show. So I try to like give people a shot too. So that really helps. And, even for Climb too, if there's a band that I've been seeing for my whole life and I've always wanted to play a show with, I'm like, I have a gap on this one. I'll just see if the guys in Climb want to play. And which is also incredibly fulfilling as an artist to be able to play with somebody or work with somebody that you've just looked up to for so long. Mm-hmm. A great example is the reason I started a hardcore band. I've been in roughly 20 bands over the course of the last decade. But the reason I started making like playing hardcore music was because of Trapped Under Ice. And I'm almost equally as a fan of Angel Dust. So we got to play with Angel Dust back in May because there was an empty spot on the bill we were booking. And just getting to hang out with Justice and play a show with him to some extent was just immediately fulfilling. Like if Climb stopped the next day, I'd be content with it. Like I was very happy with that. And those are those beautiful moments that really like make you be like, oh, all the stress is really worth it. And it It's very nice.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I think Trapped Under Ice, you know, obviously like a really huge influential band for a lot of people. And I feel like they've had an interesting history because when they were, you know, at it like full time, I felt like they were like the biggest hardcore band in the world. And even with these little breaks and them coming back, like they still have like these awesome and amazing turnouts. So it's cool to see, you know, even now in 2023 that they get like crazy amount of love, because I think, you know, they deserve it. I think everything they've done is awesome.
Yeah, I personally, despite them not putting out a record in like 5 years now, 5-6 years, I still think they're just getting cooler. Because even though they were like, they were festival headliners before the break, but they came back and they just have this whole new like energy to them that now they're just like, it feels like they're bigger than they've ever been. Because now they're not like the hot new band, but they're like just the legendary band. So it's like they just come at it with a whole new approach, and people are just, a lot of people that have been around forever love it, and then a lot of new kids that are just getting into hardcore, like, this band's headlining this festival, they must be hot shit, we gotta check them out. And then so everybody's coming to see Trapped Under Ice, and it's awesome to see. As a fan, it's awesome to see. I haven't seen them since Heatwave came out. So I haven't been to any of these like reunion headlining anything. The closest one was New York, but I wasn't able to make it out. So I'm hoping something happens in Boston soon. Even whether I do it or somebody else does it, I hope it's doable.
Yeah, hopefully they get out. Yeah, because I think the next time I'm going to be seeing them is at FYA.
Oh yeah, I have a lot of friends coming out to that. I have big Massachusetts turnout at FYA every year, which I find interesting because it's so far. But during FYA weekend, if you're in Massachusetts at a show, the show's empty every time because everybody I know is at FYA.
Yeah, I'm always surprised because you know, obviously I travel from California to Florida for the fest, and just finding out how many people are there that aren't from Florida, it's insane. But I get it because it's a really good fest, you know. And also, I'm one of those people who are traveling out for it.
Yeah, I've actually never been. I would love to go. Maybe this will be the year I go. I don't know, but I would love to go. I hope with America's hardcore ending this year that somebody, whether it's me or somebody else, picks up the torch, because I would love a really big fest in Mass where people like that like want to travel out. You know, America's hardcore has always been cool, and it's always been one of my favorite fests. And it just we're kind of limited with the space and the venues for something of that capacity. So it's never been something too big, or I feel like it hasn't reached like this massive thing it could be. Every single year has been phenomenal. But I don't see a lot of people. I don't have a lot of friends out of state come for it. And I think that's a component that I'd like to see integrated in the next couple of years, is more people traveling from, I don't know, California or Florida to come see what Boston has to offer.
I think it's the cold that probably steers a lot of people away.
And absolutely.
So close to the holidays.
Yeah, Sam does it. I mean, this year will be the first week of December. And so who wants to go to Boston in December? I live here and I don't even want to be here. I don't know. Maybe we'll do it like, I always thought Labor Day weekend, like this weekend, is such a good one because there isn't much going on and it's still nice here. Like it's 88 today.
That's not bad. One of my
long weekends.
One of my favorite sets from AHC is was it 2014 or 2015? Fury played, and I've watched that live set so many times, and it just looks so cool to see a band from here, you know, on the other side of the country, getting such an insane reaction.
One of my favorite like modern hardcore bands. I love that band. I'm happy that they're back doing stuff again. It's tough for them to come out here, obviously being from California, and also I've only ever seen them like a handful of times. It's awesome that Sam gets them to come out and play the fest, because that was most of the times I've seen them. I feel like it's been there. And then I saw them once open for Power Trip here. But my favorite all-time America's Hardcore set was there's this VFW across from the Middle East called the Cambridge Elks Lodge, but they call it the Hardcore Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't do shows there that often now. And if they do, it's only downstairs in the small room. But Sam used to have, like, I think it was the Saturday night show there, and the Friday night show was at Middle East or something like that. But it was like 2015 or 2016, Power Trip headlined that VFW like on a floor. And it was the most insane shit I've ever seen in my life. And that's always stuck with me. That fest has always been, like I said, despite it not being the biggest thing or the biggest hardcore fest, it's always carried this weight and it's always been amazing to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a bummer that it's, you know, gonna hang it up, but I get it. But for you to want to carry the torch, you know, beyond that, besides maybe wanting to move the date, like what other things you know would you change?
Well, I guess it totally depends on the time of year. Yeah, like you said, if it's outside, it obviously has to be prior to October. I don't know. I like that Sam has like different shows of different sizes. Like there's a matinee, so the matinee is a little smaller, so he has that in the mid tier room, and then the headlining show at night in the downstairs room. I'd probably do it. I sound like I know what I'm fucking talking about. Because I mean, he's been doing this for so much longer than I have, so who am I to speak on it? But I like maybe one big room and just keep it there. Mm-hmm. But it's about finding a room like that is really difficult. We've been trying to look for a long time that has like a really big hall like they have in Florida, just to have it like be a one big thing, like maybe 2 days, but still just that one room consistently. At least Sam has it in one building now. It used to be across the street and then back across the street and then back across the street. Now it's all one building that has three rooms.
Mm-hmm.
So he can do small, medium, large. And I think a main reason he's hanging it up is because we don't know where that venue stands. There's been rumors about this venue literally for the last like 5 years of this venue closing. We don't know if it's actually going to happen or not, but now it's like people really believe it's going to happen this time. And Sam was like, there's no other place I can do this, so I'm just going to stop doing it. And so that's another, I think the biggest thing is I'd have to find a big venue and something I can do it all day there, 2 days in a row. Besides that, I mean, the way he does it is so perfect, you know. It's the lineup's good, the lineup's mixed. He does a different thing each day, a different kind of idea each day. Like the pre-show this year was all Massachusetts bands, all local bands. Most of which have never played AHC, which was awesome. And then I believe this year, the rumor this year is that the pre-show is a demo core day. So it's all demo core bands, which would be really cool if that pans out. So I mean, besides the venue thing, which is a hard thing to get around, I think Sam really runs that thing smoothly. I've never been like in the nitty gritty of it, but I've never seen any complications. There's been no like bands drop last minute or something breaks or the venue closes or nothing like that. Everything's from a patron perspective, everything has gone really, really nice.
Yeah, and have to compliment the lineup, because every time I see the flyer, I always get bummed that I can't go to it, just because mm-hmm. with you know, the limited amount of time off that I have and the other things that I've already like agreed to before, you know, yeah. December rolls around, it's always been really tough. Like I, as much as I would want to go, I just was never really able to make that a priority.
Yeah, sometimes the weekend changes, so I try and keep that like those couple of weeks open. I've had a couple of bands reach out to me before Sam solidified the dates publicly. I was like, we gotta wait. we gotta wait if we can see it through that, because we don't want to do anything the same weekend as America's Hardcore, because it will just bomb. So I'll let you know. Wait for Sam to drop the dates, then we can work around that. So it's, I believe it's the first, second, and third this year, if I'm correct.
Yeah. Well,
I haven't even, usually around this time, you've already heard rumors being spit around of who's doing what and who's playing, but I haven't heard a single thing, which I'm pretty excited about, because that means it can be a genuine surprise for me. Mm-hmm. But so I'm excited to see what he does with the final year and to really send this fest off with a bang.
Yeah. Which is like bittersweet, because, you know, being around for a long time and to be able to, you know, exist as the same time as FS, but to see it go away. It's always a bummer when these like longstanding fests decide to call it quits.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be emotional for sure. I mean, that, and even if the venue that goes, that the Middle East in Cambridge, if the venue goes with it, that's going to be not only detrimental to the scene, mm-hmm. but detrimental to me as a person, because I've been going to shows there as long as I've been going to shows. And now that I'm booking shows there, it's even more integral to my life. And it's super important to me. It's a very special place. Is it the nicest venue? No, but it's got character to it. And it's a great place for a hardcore show to book it or attend. And so it really would really be destructive if that place left with the fest. But the fest alone is gonna be there'll be tears shed, absolutely.
Well, hopefully the lineup this year will do it justice.
I hope so.
Okay, well, I want to move on and just ask you about Climb. Mm-hmm. You know, like I mentioned, newer fan of the band, but I am curious, how did that band come together?
So, like I mentioned earlier, I've been in so many bands of all different genres. Ever since I discovered hardcore, that has been my main like style of music that I've listened to and invested into. Despite me making other things here and there, I'm only mainly at hardcore shows for the most part. But I wasn't currently in a hardcore band pre-pandemic. I was in a post-hardcore emo band, and we were trying to get on shows, and the pandemic happened, and that just killed that band immediately. And I was doing so many things that I kind of liked, but nothing that I really loved, or at least not for a long time. And I was just like, I love all of this, these kind of hardcore bands. Why don't I just start a band like this? And so I kind of got the gears rolling on some kids from my town that I used to make music with, but they were not really into hardcore. So it was kind of hard to convey to them what I was looking for. So they kind of, two of them kind of moved on to do their own separate thing. And then other people came in, and then they wanted something else and we wanted something else. So I've been through a lot of people, and we're all in great terms. I still hang out with 99% of them. We're all really cool. They all in other bands, just like metalcore bands and pop bands and pop punk bands and stuff. They just, but it was just like, I've been doing this for so long. Why don't I finally make the band that I've always wanted to do? And I feel like I'm really starting to do that with this band. So, I mean, I could go on for hours about the lineup changes and how we got there, but, right now it's four of my closest friends that I've been in the scene with since I was like 13, 14. And I just thought, why don't I just ask these guys? Because they all play in other bands. They're all incredibly talented musicians. They're all close friends of mine. I wouldn't mind being in a van with for a month. So it's my friend Olin, who you've done the podcast with.
Olin.
He's in Broken Vow and a bunch of other bands. He's played with Street Power over the last weekend. My friend Dom, who plays in the band Fraud, great new Boston punk band. They just signed the TGR, and they just did a weekend with Jive Bomb this past weekend. My friend Camden, who I write all the music with, he plays in the new metal band Wisdom and War from Central Mass. They're about to do a weekend run with Kei Inashi. And my friend Corey, who's the older one of the group, he's never played in a heavy band before. He usually plays in like pop punk bands and emo bands, but he's such an amazing drummer. And I always thought to myself, as long as I've known him, if I ever need a drummer for a band, a heavy band, I'm going to ask him to do it. And I was finally had the opportunity to ask him. And it's, I couldn't ask for a four better people to be in a band with. And I'm really excited with what we've done so far and what we're planning on doing. And it's really exciting.
I think it's awesome that you're able to, call upon your friends to, build out this lineup and just kind of enjoy their company. Cause I feel like that is a big thing, right? To be able to be around these people for extended periods of time. Cause, traveling to shows, just having to deal with their personalities, with practicing, being on stage, it's a lot. And some people don't realize that.
Yeah. I mean, people previously in Climb and in my other bands have been like some of my childhood best friends that I've known forever, but being in a band brings a whole new set of obstacles that people don't understand. And I had to learn the hard way that people I would like die for, that being in a band with them is fucking off. Cause one little thing that we could disagree on could just snowball into a whole thing. And, that was kind of why we went through so many people early on, because I was like, oh, I really want this hardcore drum beat. And my friend who was the drummer at the time was really into like more like new metal and stuff like that. So he was doing this whole separate groove with it. And I was like, nah, that's not really what I'm going for. And then we'd start to bicker. And then, and it just kind of like, we're really cool now, but it took such a toll on our friendship. We weren't speaking. We couldn't do anything. Like, people don't understand that no matter how close you are with these people, you have to be creatively compatible with them and be able to like have a conversation about what's bothering you and what you want to do. And you have to be flexible. A lot of people don't get that. So you need to really, before you go into it, you really got to think who you're doing it with, why you're doing it, why that's the person you choose. Can you do this? Can they do this? And I think it's one of the things that people need to ask themselves when picking their bandmates. Because some things, I've been lucky enough to repair all broken relationships caused by band drama. Other people haven't been so lucky. I know good friends I know bands that have destroyed lifelong friendships, and it's really sad to see. So just the message that I would put out to young kids is, be careful with who you're picking to put in your band, because it's heavy and it brings a lot of things you would never expect on to happen. So,
yeah, no, I 100% agree. The last hardcore band I was in, I feel like I don't speak to half the band to this day because of stuff that happened in the band. It's crazy.
It's definitely because I mean, I remember when it happened. So I would say there's been three eras of Climb.
Okay.
There's the OG lineup, which is me and some kids I used to make music with in high school, and I've been making music for them forever. So I thought, why would it not make sense? And then I realized they didn't really like heavy music. So two of them kind of moved on to their own thing. So then I asked a bunch of kids that I knew through the scene that love heavy music, but it was the wrong kind of heavy music. And then also we both all, like at least four of us, at the time we were like a six piece. We had different views about what we wanted and what we wanted to do. And so these kids that I used to see every single day, we were at each other's throats, because creatively we just wanted different things. And we all felt so passionately about what we wanted to do. It just didn't mesh well. So then they went on to do their own bands. There was never like, fuck you, get out of here, or you're done, or I quit. It was just like, hey, I'm in this band and I'm also in Climb, so I'm going to go focus on this band. And I go, more power to you. Absolutely. I will support that band. I love you. I love that band. And I still do that for my friends post Climb. And then, so going in, I was like, who are people I've known forever that would be compatible with creatively? And I just also enjoy their presence. And I was lucky, and people, a lot of our friends in the scene call it a super group because it's five people that have all been in a million bands and have all been around and know everybody and are pretty generally cool with everybody. So it's like the fact that all five of us are in one group is kind of a perfect situation.
Okay. And I'm curious, just everything I know is based off of what you guys have on the internet. And was there no like proper demo leading up to it? Because all I can see is there was just these singles.
There was the two singles prior to the EP, the standalone singles, one of which featuring Kadeem from Loathe and the other one Pierce from Soul Glow. Those were the two tracks from the demo that we rework and re-release.
Okay.
And they have a totally different vibe to them than the EP does, as you can hear. So that was kind of what was happening with that second iteration of Climb. And then the EP that we just released in January is the first thing with the whole new lineup. It's our first proper compiled release. And it's like what I really am really happy with doing and what I've been trying to achieve. And we're doing more of the same coming up with slight changes and stuff like that. But yeah, there was a three track demo. It was the two songs you can hear. And then in between there was like a 30-second instrumental interlude. So that was all that was really existed before what you see on Spotify.
Okay. And before we get into the latest release, I'm just curious, can you speak about who is C310?
The photographer?
Yeah.
He is, I don't know his real name. He's, that's his Instagram handle. He is a gentleman from Asia. I don't know which country, he never specified.
Okay, wow, so mysterious.
Yeah, he just takes amazing film photos on Instagram. And I was like, I've always preferred film to digital.
Mm-hmm.
As difficult as it is to work with. And I was just like, oh, I want these. I want to use these real bad. And I was just like, so I just DM'd him and I was like, and you see two of them, but I bought a lot of them and they're all sitting in a Google Drive for future stuff. But I was just like, hey man. And he clearly had to use Google Translate because the grammar was all sporadic. Mm-hmm. And he was just like, this much money. So I PayPal'd him this much money and he sent me the raw photos via email. And that's all I really know about him. I haven't bought anything off him in a very long time because I bought so many right off the jump. I still follow him, but we haven't spoken. But he's very elusive. Same thing goes with our logo. Our logo was done by some kid in Brazil who was like only like 14, 15.
Oh, wow.
And I found him on Twitter and he was just doing a series of like typefaces and logos that I thought were really cool. And so I DM'd him and he whipped that up in like a day and I was so happy with it. And, so I just PayPal'd them the money and the rest was history. And I don't use Twitter anymore, so I don't really have a way of contacting him or know what he's up to. But all the Climb art has been some weird backdoor, mysterious encounter.
Well, I was going to ask, because the logo looks like a UFO or a UAP, whatever yeah. people want to call it these days. Which I think is pretty interesting, but I do like it, and to hear that it's just from some teenager in Brazil that was doing cool stuff, that's pretty wild to put that much trust into these people that you don't know that well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I just, regardless of what the music sounds like and whether or not that correlates with the logo, I just wanted something that looked like it was from the 90s, because whether that's what we're doing musically or not, I just, everything... It's not even like a nostalgia thing because I'm not that old to really have really experienced the 90s, but I'm very fond of aesthetically what was going on in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And so like, even though that logo looks like it probably could go to like a breakbeat side project or like a new metal type band, it just kind of slapped on Climb and I just really love the way it looks. Like we get a lot of comparisons. We get a lot of people say it looks like the Bjork logo. Which is honestly a compliment because I love Bjork. I've loved everything she's ever done. So that was a really cool comparison. And then I love that people can't read it a lot of the time. People really struggle to read it. And I'm like, well, I love death metal and black metal. none of those logos are legible, so I don't really care if you can't read it.
Yeah, there's
you still recognize it.
I can read Climb because I know what it is, but yeah, when it comes to these, like, you know, crazy metal like fonts, I'm just like, there's no way people can actually read that shit. It's crazy. Nah, like,
it's just at that point, it's just like recognizing, like, it's the same thing if the logo is just an image, because you're like, oh, that's Sanguisugabog, because I know what it looks like. You can't read it, but you know what it is because you know the band at this point. Yeah. So that's what I was kind of going for. Like, even though you can't read Climb, people that know it now recognize it, and they look at it and they go, oh, that's, we can't fucking read it, but we know it's Climb.
Yeah. And when I'm looking at those metal flyers, I'm like, please have like the name in the caption so I could see who's playing, so I can try to look these bands up.
No, I know. Sometimes I'm really like, oh man, that logo was so cool. I really wish I knew what this band sounded like. And I'm struggling. And then I have to embarrassingly like DM the promoter and be like, who the fuck is this?
Okay.
But, so- I respect it. I respect that. I respect those bands' commitment to the bit of just being the most disgusting looking logo, and just, it's just so not, cannot make it out at all.
All right. So Keep Me From What I Want, latest release. Can you talk about that whole process of creating the records, since it was like this new era for Climb?
Yeah. So with old Climb, we wrote about 15 songs, and all of them were about 80-90% done. And we kept like making studio dates that we couldn't make because we were differing with what we were going to do. And I had all these ideas still. And like, I didn't, when they all left, or like the people I wrote the songs with came and went and whatever, I didn't feel right finishing the songs that other people had started, or I had started with other people. Mm-hmm. So I scrapped all of them. So when I got the new lineup in fall of last year, I sat down with Camden and I was like, let's just work. And it didn't feel forced at all, but we were just like, we couldn't stop working. We just felt this like flow, and we were just writing songs so fast. And so we were able to crank them out. So me and Camden first met up in like late September, mid, like early October. And we wrote like maybe like 8 songs, and we picked our 5 favorites. And then, and I'm like, well, who are we going to go to? Like, there's so many people to go to. And it, I mean, we've done demos in the past, so this isn't like a just go to whoever. We want to pick someone we know has a history of doing good shit, and but also isn't the most expensive person in the world. And it's local. So from going to shows, I had linked up with Alex Salter, who at the time was playing drums in the band Taking Meds. And he stepped down from that to do his full-time job now, which is he does front of house and merch for Drug Church. He lives in New Hampshire. And he also, as of this past summer, is now the full-time drummer of Gel. But he was always a really nice guy, and he was always coming to shows. He was coming down to Boston for shows all the time. And I was a fan of Taking Meds. And one day he posted that he had been doing producing, and I had no idea. And I looked into his thing. He was the apprentice for John Markson. So he had worked on the last 2 Drug Church full lengths. He worked on the Regulate self-titled, all stuff I really liked the sound of. So I was like, oh, hey man, we got 5 tracks we want to do later this year. Would you be down to do it? He's absolutely. So we went in as early as December to track those 5 songs. The other members at the time, we were working on solidifying the other 3 guys, and they were kind of just so new to it that me and Camden tracked the whole record ourselves, just the 2 of us, up at, I believe it's called the Noise Floor in Dover, New Hampshire, which is Alex's main studio. We did it in 2 days. It was really, it felt really comfortable. It felt really natural. It was really nice. Alex is a great producer. I've been doing this for a long time, and I've been to a lot of studios, and I really felt that he pushed me to go to a place where I've never really been before, but it also didn't feel abrasive. It didn't feel like I was afraid to upset him, or I was like sweating or pushing myself too hard. But he was like, let's try this, let's try that, stuff I'd never really experienced before with a producer. And it was really nice. And So then he also took on the duty of mixing and mastering those five songs himself as well. And it was just that we were so happy with them. And then the second that, like, we had planned for it to come out in late January, and we had already started taking on shows, and our first show back and our first show with the new lineup was in at this venue called Dusk in Providence. It was us, this oi band from Providence called Klaxon, Street Power, Colin of Arabia, and Cruel Hand. And I was like, all right, this is it. What a great first show back. And I consider it like our first show. Like, it was like a soft reboot, you know? And I was like, what a first show to come back on. We're playing all new songs that have never been played live before. That's going to be our whole set. We're playing the whole EP front to back. We'll see how it goes. And it was just a whole new energy I had never experienced prior with Climb. It just felt like something new and fresh and fun. And we all were just riffing off each other, and everybody killed it. It was awesome. And then we've just been chugging along doing that. We've been trying to do something I strive for with Climb, is I don't want to be put in a box. So, I mean, we play death metal shows, we play rap shows. I don't say yes to everything, but like genre wise, if I think the artist is cool, I'll take the show. You know what I mean? I'm not someone that just takes every show, because that's also bad for a band to do, because you start to oversaturate yourself. So we've just been playing an array of different shows. Our second show back was opening for Vomit Forth and Mutilatrid in Cambridge. And so we're a hardcore band playing with two death metal bands. So I went in thinking these kids are going to throw rocks at us. But I don't care, because I'm friends with all the dudes in Vomit Forth. They're great guys. They're from the area. They're from Connecticut, and some of my favorite fucking people in the scene. And so I was like, you know what? They want us to play. It'll be fun. I want us to just be versatile and play whatever. And the kids loved us. It was really surprising. We sold more merch at that show than we ever had at any other show. And so we've had a great year of just doing stuff like that. We go play a hardcore show, and then we go play a shoegaze show, and then we play a death metal show. And currently, right now, we're taking a break to write, but that's what we've been up to this past year. It feels like it's been 3 years, but it's been about 10 months.
Yeah, that is pretty wild to be able to take a step back. Here we are in September, right? 9 months into the year, coming close to the end of it. And yeah, it seems like just by hearing you speak about it, just the year of you guys coming back and doing these awesome shows, I think it's smart to be able to get out of, like, you know, the comfort of playing a hardcore show and playing the metal shows, especially rap shows. I think it's awesome, because I always tell people, you don't know who's in the room, who might be a fan of your stuff. So just get out there, and obviously if it makes sense, somewhat, just go out and do it. Like, the worst is going to happen. It's like, you know, you're going to leave with no new fans, but, you know, best, outcomes, like, you're going to leave with one new fan. That could change everything.
I've played to more empty horseshoes at hardcore shows than I have at death metal shows and like shoegaze shows. Mm-hmm. So it really goes to show that you don't know who's out there and who might really enjoy your shit. And so it really is just try to be as, I mean, do what you like, enjoy. Cause that's the whole thing. As I expressed before, I don't just listen to hardcore. My two favorite bands of all time, were Rage Against the Machine and the 1975. So what you're going to get is you're going to get with Climb, you're going to get a hardcore band with a large energy of flamboyancy and sass. So, and that's what I'm coming at it with. It's just something that doesn't make sense. So don't try and make sense of it. I'm just enjoying myself, and I'm enjoying what's coming out of it. So I get a lot of people being like, why are you playing with Fuming Mouth? And I'm like, because I think that band rules. They're my friends. They want us to play. I like to play. So I'm going to play it. And whether those kids fuck with us or not, I'm going to have a great time. So.
Yeah, no, I think it's really important to just be yourself, right? Just for people to, you know, expect you to be a certain thing just because of, you know, maybe your aesthetic or the way the band sounds, can get weird sometimes.
Yeah. People, I've had a couple people ask me, they go, people are really into the beat down tough guy stuff right now. Why aren't you doing that? And I'm like, I love that shit, but I'm not a tough guy. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge bitch. I can't hold my own, man. Why would I try and pretend something I'm not, you know, as much as I love that shit and I'll go mosh for that shit. And some of my best friends play that kind of stuff. That's not what I'd be making, because I'd feel like a fraud.
Yeah. No, I get it. But I like the band, like, right? Like, I feel like opening the record with Lights Out is, that was a very smart choice, because I just think that song just has so much energy. And it was like, that's what, honestly, what hooked me, because I'm always skeptical, right? Because, I would like to assume that my friends, when they come to me with suggestions, that it's going to be something worth listening to. But as I was listening to Lights Out, I was just like, oh shit, like, it was one of those moments where I'm like, wow, how did this band fly under my radar, and I was just not aware for so long.
It was when we chose that to be the single for the record, I really think we knew what we were doing. It was the second song we wrote for the EP. And this, the second I heard it, I was like, this is the one. Like, out of the fuck, I love the other four songs. Mm-hmm. But I was like, this is the one that has to be first and foremost, because it has to be the single and it has to open the record. So it gets people like, whoa, you know what I mean? And so we open our set. I mean, we don't, the last show we played was the first time we didn't, but every show this year, we've opened the set with it. Just so people are like immediately hit with that energy, you know? And then, we close it the same way we close the EP, and the same way we close the EP, which is Sleeve of Sleeves, which I think is the second most energetic song on the EP. So it really just, like, we start with energy and we end with energy, you know. No breaks. We play a short set. We play for like 12 minutes. So I'm going to make those 12 minutes a fucking aggressive 12 minutes.
I think that's awesome, because I hate when I'm watching a band and I'm just like, can this end already?
Yeah, this is dragging, you know. I mean, I really truly believe that no hardcore sets would be over 20, 25 minutes. Like, even if you're a headlining band. Like, I just, it's hardcore and aggressive music is such like a moment, you know. It's what you feel in that moment. And if you drag it out, you spoil the moment, you know. That's 100%. Why the best hardcore records are not the ones that are 18 tracks long. They're the ones that are 12 tracks long, you know, or less. Because people just want to feel that burst of energy, and you want to keep going, and feel it. They don't want to have to take a breather and sit. They just want to have that rush for that short period of time, and then go outside, smoke a cigarette, come back inside, and then see the next band.
Yeah, I love when the downtime between bands is very minimal, when they're able to do a quick changeover, just keep the energy flowing. I think that's like my favorite type of shows. Mm-hmm.
I know. I love. I get to go outside real quick and talk to everybody, see what they thought of it, catch up, maybe someone I haven't seen in a while, and then before I know it, I hear distortion from the guitar to get people back inside. I was like, oh, they're about to play. Let's go. And it's a whole new thing. That's why I also love mixed bills, because if I got 15 minutes of that burst of energy and I was matched with the same thing, even though it's a different band doing different songs, a different set, it could the same way spoil the moment of like, all right, now this is dragging out because this is just another 15 minutes of the same shit. So if you mix it up, if you do hardcore band, death metal band, hardcore band, post-hardcore band, you're going to get this whole new range of feelings and emotions over the course of a five-man show, which I really enjoy. Mixed bills, I talk to a lot of people about it, and I have people come from out of state, and they're like, something about New England hates mixed bills. I've seen massive walkouts. I've seen people just get like angry or fussy, and I'm just like, fuck you guys, this is sick. I'm one of my favorite mixed bill tours was the one that came through last May. It was Gatecreeper, Narrowhead, 200 Stab Wounds, and Fearing. So you got like a 90s-esque post-punk band into a death metal band, into a shoegaze band, into another death metal band. I'm like, that's pretty cool. Those are pretty good palate cleansers in between each other. And I just seeing just the difference in like attendance in that room during the different sets. I was just like, all four of these bands, fuck. I don't know where you guys are going. Like, I didn't know you wanted to hear nothing but gutturals for the next 3 hours. Like, this is a good, like, all four of these bands are good and doing their own thing, and I enjoy it. So,
yeah, for me,
something about Massachusetts doesn't click with it quite yet.
I'm a fan of mixed bills because I listen to so many different types of genres. So when a mixed bill is happening, I'm like, cool, I can check off a bunch of, you know, bands that I enjoy. And I would much rather see a shoegaze band on a hardcore bill than go to a shoegaze like filled bill, because at that point it's a little too chill, a little too mellow, and I get tired.
Too much standing with your hands by your side.
Yeah, and I'm just like, geez, this is either I'm not gonna go, or I'm just gonna show up for the band I want to see. You know, which obviously I'm sure there's probably some missed opportunities on bands that I probably would have enjoyed, but it's still, it's just the energy is just like, I'm just not for it for a whole night, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally get it. I told somebody recently that hardcore rotted my brain to the point where if I go to a show where there isn't at least an aggressive band playing for at least a little bit, I just don't know what to do with myself. I start sitting there, I start twiddling my thumbs. You know, no matter how good the band is, if they're not getting people to move or at least dance or sing or some kind of jumping, I'm just like sitting here with my hands by my side. I'm checking my phone. I'm like, this is four bands in a row of this. I can't do this. Like, I'm a big pop music fan, but I've been to plenty of pop shows where people are not dancing and having fun. And I'm like, I'm having a horrible time no matter how much I love this artist, because there's just no energy in the crowd whatsoever. And it's disappointing to see.
Yeah, it's strange. It's like I could have just watched this on YouTube and been exactly fine.
Like, I'd much rather be seeing some whack local band in a basement somewhere, because at least those kids are having a blast, you know. And even so, yeah, mixed bills really, really, I love just that, bring that, because like, if I'll watch a shoegaze band any day if it's followed by a band that's going to have the room exploding.
I agree. Okay, ask you about the cover of the singles, but I'm curious about Alice Hirsch, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
I believe so. Alice plays in a band called Cloned Apparition from Apparition from Toronto, I believe. I believe they just started that band recently. They weren't in a band. That was somebody I just followed based on, oh, I like your photography. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it is film, but it looks like film. So I was like, I love this photo. This is the photo. Like, I didn't test other photos for the EP art. I saw that and I was like, and it was like, this was like 8 months before the AP came out. Like, we were recording this other song, Old Climb. I saw that and I go, can I use this photo? Can I buy this photo off you to use it? And Alice was like, yes, absolutely. Here's the price, whatever. We made it happen. Don't really know them that well, or mutuals on Instagram. I enjoy their band. I've told them I'd love to book them in Boston sometime. But what was it? It reminded me of the music video for Crash Into Me by Dave Matthews Band, which, like I said earlier, has a really notable 90s look to it, 90s aesthetic, and it's an amazing song, amazing video. And I think that's what really jumped out to me, is I was like, oh, that reminds me of that. And that's what I'm going for. You know, maybe it's not a hardcore album cover, but then again, that's not really what I'm trying to convey. So I think it really hit the nail on the head. And so I just slapped the Clam logo on a photo and just made it work.
Yeah, well, I'm enjoying these photos, so I hope you continue that in the future.
We do. I can tell you a bit prematurely that we have two singles being mixed right now that we hope to have out by the end of the year. They're both photos I bought from the original gentleman from Asia. And we're working on our second EP now, and I'm already looking at stuff that Alice has done over the past year, what I could possibly use, because I would love to do something with them again.
Okay. And these songs that you're working on that are coming out in the future, are any of them the leftover songs from Keep Me From What I Want? Because you mentioned earlier that you guys had 8 songs, but you only went with the 5.
Nah, we're starting fresh. We're trying a whole bunch of new things, sonically and like rhythmically. And so we're really, and now Olin now that Olin's been in the band, like officially since we recorded the first release, they have started contributing to writing as well, which brings a whole new vibe to it entirely. So it's like those songs are so like far from what we're planning next that it's like it'd almost be, we'll just let them sit there, you know, because this is like a whole new chapter and we already have so many ideas for what we're going to do. And the plan is to record it in December. So we hope to have 24 be a whole year of just a whole new era of Klein, just hitting it as hard as we can, playing as many shows, bring a whole new look, aesthetic to the whole band, which is the idea. We'll see how it actually works out. But I got some stuff kicking around.
Okay. And the two singles that are being worked on right now, are they going to be you know, grouped together in like a promo, or are they just going to be released individually?
So I can go back and I can speak about the two singles we released before Keeping What I Want. The first one is Threshold from the demo. So originally it didn't have that feature on it, and neither did Pendulum. So the most important thing to me about making music, whether it's hardcore or not, is in the community and interacting with people that mean a lot to me, like playing with Justice or meeting new friends at a show or being in a band with people I love. So there's so many musicians that I admire and I would like to work with, but it's like, logistically, will I ever be able to, you know what I mean? Like, who knows if Klein would ever play a show with Load, cause they're so massive now, you know? And, as much as I like booking mixed bills, promoters don't. So who knows if I'll ever get to like just hop on a show with them. And I admired that band a lot. And I was like, how do I fulfill something that I really want to happen while also making it, while also like giving back to this community of people that I adore? So I thought of this idea that with whatever songs we don't think fit the vibe of a record, we'll release in between the records, the standalone things. The idea was each song was to have a feature from a band that I admire. And the Bandcamp Friday proceeds of that song would be donated to a charity of the guest's choice. So Kadeem did the feature on Threshold, and we donated those proceeds to Black Lives Matter. And a couple months later, Pendulum came out on Bandcamp Friday. I think it was October 21. And that was donated to some Philly art project, because Soul Glow is from Philly. And so the next two singles are two more of those. I can tell you ahead of time now that the first one, I don't know which one will come out first, but one of them features Ali Lowe from the band Special Interest from Georgia. And then the other one features Kane, the vocalist of Omniforth. Two completely different sounding bands, both on songs that sound neither which like their bands. And that's kind of the idea I'm going for. It's kind of like, this doesn't make sense. But it makes sense to me because I love it. I love Special Interest. I love Omniforth. And those Bandcamp Fridays, whenever those songs eventually come out, those proceeds will go to whatever charity each respective artist chooses. Because that way I get to check something off my bucket list, and it also does well for everyone else too. It's not just, oh, it's me. It's everybody else too. So
yeah, I think it's a really cool way to give back to you know, communities that you know, they think are important. So I think that's a really great idea to be able to do that, because I don't think I've ever heard of anybody doing that.
Yeah, because they're all from different places of the world. Like Lowe's from the UK, Soglo's from Philly, Special Interest from Georgia, and Vomit Force from Connecticut. So they all got their own things going on, their own scenes and things that they'd like to support. So I think it's really interesting stuff. I would never be on my radar all the way here in Boston. So I think it's, I think I'm doing right by doing it, and I hope other people see it that way. Cause it's something I get to do creatively, and also just do something else that nobody else is really doing that specific way of doing it right now.
100%. No, I really like that idea, because obviously I came in after those singles were released, so I had no idea that you were doing those Bandcamp Friday donations to the charities of their choice.
And whatever follows the next EP, we'll probably do a couple more, because I also don't want to, the reason we're putting out an EP so soon after the last one, like a year, 2 years time, is because we just start so excited. And we, now that we have three different songwriters in the band, it's this whole new sonic thing. And we want to take it even further. But I don't want to do so many collective releases so close to each other. So I think the idea of standalone singles in between each release gives people that want more Climb a chance to it. And it gives us a reason, like it gives us something to do with the songs that we're working on now, but not necessarily like have the idea of like a new record in mind. So like the next, whatever comes after the next EP will probably be singles for a good long while until we think about what we're going to do after that.
Okay, man. I think that's a great way to stay relevant and not have to, kind of put a whole new record on people. Cause sometimes that can be a little overwhelming when it's just like, it can be good and bad, just depending on, how people feel and how the band rolls it out. I feel like it's just like time and place kind of thing. Cause like I said, it can be bad, it can be good, but, I think it's nice to be able to just, kind of be in the people's eye, but not have to be like, here's a whole new body of work that you have to, consume to understand what we're going with. So sometimes people get lost. There's too many albums coming out. So you're just like, shit, like I haven't even had a chance to bond with the last record, but here we are, I'm trying to play catch up. And then eventually people just kind of get lost and don't ever catch up.
Exactly. And I listen to so much hardcore and I see so many hardcore bands that like, when a new record comes out and people are hype on it, I don't usually listen to it at first. Because I think, oh, this is just the hype moment. You know what I mean? And a lot of people are just like, this is the best thing I've ever heard. You gotta listen to it right now. It's not until like 6 months later, if people are still talking about that record, then I'll give it like a solid chance. Because I'm like, oh, this has longevity at least. This isn't just like a flash in the pan, it must be very good if people are still talking about it. So, because like you said, like people don't give it like enough time to like really soak in a record before they're like thrown something else. So I like to let a record sit before I'm like, oh, go listen to this. Like I was, a good example is the Never Ending Game record. I know people, how much people love that band, and I loved their previous releases, and I'd only seen them once, because they're from far away. So when they dropped a new full length, everyone was so hyped because they had waited so long. And so everyone was talking about it. And I was like, of course everyone's going to talk about it. Everyone's been waiting for it for so long. So I let it kind of sit for a little bit. And then I gave it a shot. And I fucking love it. It's like my favorite hardcore record that's come out this year. So I'm really happy. I waited on it a little bit, because obviously people are going to be so hyped at the beginning. And I still see people talking about it, especially with the fact that they'll be playing here in 2 or 3 weeks with Fiddlehead. So I'm like, oh, maybe it's time for me to sit down and listen to this record. And I'm like, wow, this is awesome. So.
Yeah, great band. Super talented. And last thing for Climb, the show that you guys have in November, could that be the last one for the year since you're going to be working on new music in December?
There's some things we've been asked to do that we might accept. We're not super locked in. We don't have anything from now until then right now. So from now till November 13th, we don't have anything. It's just writing, and the fact that Broken Vow is releasing a record. Olin's going to be very busy. And Fraud has some unannounced runs they're doing as well, because they're writing off of their new EP. I can say that me and Austin from Buried Dreams and SOS Booking are doing our own East Coast equivalent of For the Children.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it's going to be, we're probably not going to call it that. Austin's correlating with SOS Booking, and then I'm doing my end on Peace on Fire. the day after Black Friday. It's going to be just like any other toy drive, like $10 for the toy, you know. Mm-hmm. It's going to be all Massachusetts bands, probably like 8 to 10 bands. And Austin suggested that Climb play. So we'll probably do that. And unless something very lucrative comes our way in December, that will probably be our last show for the year. And that's only like a week or two after my birthday show. So mm-hmm. we only really have like 2 confirmed shows for the rest of the year.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. Well, it's been, you know, if those, you know, toy drive shows, if that's the last one, I feel like it's been an awesome year for Climb. And, you know, hopefully next year you guys are able to, you know, put out that new music and get busier.
Yeah, we want to, I mean, I've toured with other bands in the past, but it's been years since I've been in a touring band. So I would really like to get out, you know, okay. No matter where. I mean, I'll go anywhere if people want to see it. You know, there's no place where I'm like, I'm not going to play there. I hear a lot of bands being like, I don't want to play that state or that city. And I'm like, there's people that want to fucking see you there. And the lineup's cool. You should go. So if anything, like, I'm not opposed to going all the way to Alaska for one show if it means people want to see us out there. So I'm hoping around everyone's schedules we can make something happen. I'm consistently talking to Bertels about doing something with many of his bands. So hopefully we can make something work with that. But we've always got gears turning. We're never truly stagnant. I'm always doing stuff behind the scenes that are Climb related or Peace on Fire related. So we're not docile.
Okay. And last thing, I saw that you posted a newer thing you're playing in, Hate Still Burns.
Yeah. As of, I live in the South Shore, Massachusetts. I'm about 40 minutes from Boston, about an hour from Providence, hour 45, 2 hours from everything Connecticut. I'm in a great middle ground.
Okay.
Not quite the Cape. But it's like, I live in Plymouth County, which is where Brockton is as well. So the legendary 90s, early 2000s Brockton shows happened 20 minutes from where I live. Mm-hmm. So you don't meet a lot of kids. I've grew up meeting kids from Central Mass, Western Mass, North Shore, and especially Boston that are into hardcore. And once Brockton kind of like fizzled out in the 2010s, not fizzled out, it's still very active, but like it's not like the like people come from outside of Brockton to come to Brockton. It's not often you meet a lot of kids in the scene from the South Shore. So I am ecstatic to find that. And so about 2 years ago, this band formed called Armageddon 2001, all of kids from the South Shore. So I was ecstatic to hear that. And then they eventually rebranded under the name Hate Still Burns. So I've kept very close with them. They're all like very young. Their drummer is 18. And so they're younger than me. And but I'm just so stoked on them from the jump. And I've been a fan since day one. And their bassist is going to work on a new project. So a week ago, they kind of hit me with, hey, would this be interesting? And before they even finished the question, I said yes. So last night was their last show with their current bassist. So as of today, I am in Hate Still Burns.
Which I think is awesome. I love everything about that band. I think they're awesome. What they're doing is so cool. So I'm a huge fan. And when I found out that you're a part of that band, I'm like, oh, that's sick. Now I've had somebody from Hate Still Burns on the podcast. Great band.
Because I mean, Climb is its own like weird entity. That's my child, you know. And mm-hmm. this will give me an opportunity to play a whole different array of shows with just ass beater riffs and like, you know, and more of a metalcore feel to it, you know. They're not my songs, you know. I get to experience something completely new from a different perspective, and they have a whole new EP recorded being mixed right now that'll be coming out through days. I'm really excited for people to hear the songs. They already have touring plans, so I'll already be out and about with them as soon as like October. So I'm very excited about that. That is like such, it's so new to me. It's like hard for me to speak on, but I'm really excited to be in a band with a bunch of young kids that are so excited and fresh to hardcore and just really want to get out there. And I can kind of hopefully give them some guidance and teach them a thing or two, what to do and what not to do. And it's a fun little side project I'll be getting to do for the foreseeable future.
Hell yeah. That's awesome. Shout out Hatesville Burns. But all right, Connor, this has been so awesome. I appreciate you taking the time to do this today. But before we sign off, is there anything else you would like to say?
Thank you so much for having me. I've been a fan of the podcast. I'm going to continue to listen.
Thank you.
Some of my favorite people.
Thank you.
Just in the scene in general on, let alone some of my closest friends, you know, like I'd love to shout out Nick Bertles for hooking this up. One of my best friends. And then I know he had no part of it, but I want to shout out BG because BG,
great person,
as someone who he's older than me, not too much older. Like I wouldn't consider him an old head, but he was able to show me a lot of things that parkour was capable of being that I never realized before. He has helped me do things and see things with bands and shows and venues and a community that I would never knew existed. I was in this very specific pocket of hardcore most of my life, and I was missing out on this whole other side of it, especially when it comes to booking shows. So I credit the last 4 years of what I was doing with booking and playing and et cetera, largely to BG. So I want to thank both of those people before I leave.
Awesome. Well, once again, I appreciate your time. It means a lot to me, and I appreciate your support. You know, Nick did mention to me that you were a listener of the podcast, so I thank you, because for everyone who still, you know, takes time out of their day for whatever they're doing and, you know, listens to my podcast, whether it be here on Spotify, YouTube, my website, wherever, it's truly humbling to this day. You know, we're closing in on 400 episodes, and I still appreciate all the support from everybody. So it means a lot. So for me to be able to have someone like you be on the podcast who's a listener, I think that's really awesome. So thank you.
Yeah, I was talking to Evan Stein last night, and he was ecstatic to hear that I was coming on. He was like, "Oh, it's a great podcast. I've been on it multiple times," and I didn't know that, so I got to go back and listen to Evan's episodes, but he was just like super stoked that I was going to be on here. So that made me even more excited. I was like, "Oh, I'm fucking stoked." I got up early. I cleaned my room. I showered.
Oh yeah. All right. Well, thank you again. Thank you everybody for tuning in. We'll be back soon. Goodbye.